is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Jody Coombs. He is a musician, illustrator, artist, and photographer. And he's done a lot of synthwave, darkwave music. Jody, great having you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Robert. It's very nice to be here.
And I'm also joined here with Sam Kevorkian and JJ Michael.
Thanks for bringing me on yet again.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Jody, you were telling me your original background was, prior to music, was that you were a game designer?
Yeah, I still am. I still have the day job, as it were, yes. I've been in the games industry for about 10 years now.
What games in particular have you worked on?
Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2, Harry Potter, the worst game I ever worked on. And then I've done some mobile games. I've worked for people like King and Space Ape, Clash of Clans, that kind of thing.
Was it primarily more the artistic part or technical part?
Well, I actually started doing the artistic part, but I come from a technical background. I used to work in IT and build PCs and servers back when I was very, very young. So basically, I started doing a thing called UX, which is kind of the user-focused design of interfaces, that kind of thing. So it's a bit of art, it's a bit of design, it's a bit of psychology, because I studied psychology at university. So it kind of combines all of my skill set.
Are there any particular video games that had an influence on your current illustrations?
Yes, I mean, I very much some of the more kind of cyberpunk games like Shadowrun, that kind of thing. I've always been interested in, like, you know, neon cities, you know, Beneath a Steel Sky. I've always liked point-and-click kind of, you know, more story-based games.
I know there's a game called, I heard of it, Leisure Suit Larry. We had the Aloe on the show.
Yes, I did listen to that the other day. It was quite amusing.
Yeah, what's interesting about that game is it reminds me kind of that, it has that retrowave or vaporwave aesthetic, but I was talking to Aloe, he didn't really say it was intentional, he was just kind of saying I was just going with the color palette of the time.
Yeah, I think obviously that's a lot where a lot of that color comes from, is like that, like late 80s, early 90s gaming, where because there was a restricted color palette on the machines that they were using, they tend to go for these weird contrasting or complementary colors, like Leisure Suit Larry.
Were you an illustrator prior to video game design, or did you start illustrating more recently? You've done some retrowave-themed illustrations that you have posted on your Facebook page.
Well, actually, that was what I used to do in a lot of my spare time. I've always been an artist since I was young. Used to do a lot of more hand kind of drawn stuff. I used to do comics, that kind of thing. And yeah, I spent a long time just teaching myself Illustrator and Photoshop, just for pure pleasure more than anything else. And then I started to use it in more in my work, which was, you know, it kind of helped me get into the games industry.
Yeah. Another aspect of retro that I really like is the, you know, sort of like 80s action or horror movie or sci-fi movie element. Has that influenced you at all?
Yes, very much. I am a great lover of 80s movies. Obviously, you've got the classics like Blade Runner and Top Gun, but a lot of the kind of smaller films, just the whole aesthetic of 80s action films with the over-top cars, the over-top girls, the big guns, big explosions, walking away from explosion. It's got that kind of, that over kind of, you know, testosterone kind of action feel. And I think it fits a lot of the music that's coming out at the moment as well.
And your music label is Star Noir. Is that, did you just start that, or you've been doing that for quite some time?
Well, it's been something that I've been wanting to do for a while, but I've just never found the time or the inclination. And I've been listening to synthwave for, you know, quite a long time now, and it got to like Christmas time, and I just thought, well, you know, seeing I've learned, you know, I've taught myself to do things like illustration and this kind of thing, I'm like, well, I'll have a go at music. So I just started it, and it's the first name that came into my head, so I just ran with it basically, and I really like it. So
you're saying were you a musician prior to that, or you're fairly new to music?
I'm brand new to music. I've got this hunger to learn new things. So at Christmas time, I bought myself a normal MIDI keyboard, a copy of FL Studio. I actually used TimeCop 1983's tutorial on FL Studio on how to make synthwave, and that was the first bit of music I ever made. Then I signed up for a load of courses on music composition, music theory, bought a load of VST synths, plugins, and I just every night I just try and learn something new or try something new.
And you were saying you were influenced by Absolute Valentine. We had him on the show, so you're kind of going more for that kind of a dark wave or dark synth style.
Yes, but I think it fits into, because I come from musically, my music taste is very industrial, goth, kind of Nine Inch Nails, kind of Alien Sex Fiend, Type O Negative. I like that really dark, kind of aesthetic to music, but I also like the cyberpunk kind of vibe, so I think I've just kind of naturally gone towards that. And I luckily got to play in the same on the same stage as Absolute Valentine. I had a good chat with him. We talk quite a lot now. We're talking about doing something together in the future. So because our musical tastes and thoughts align.
So this was at the London Retro Future Fest. Was that just a music fest or overall retro futurist theme?
Well, it was themed. I think the gentleman that put it on, a guy called William, he's really trying to do something special in the synthwave scene. So it was his next one that he's got coming up next year is going to have visual artists there selling their work, people selling all sorts of gear. He really wants to bring the entire of the aesthetic together, the entire synthwave scene. But the one in London was just more music, just for that one.
Yes. When you're composing music electronically, how's it different than composing it instrumentally?
Well, actually, it's very visual. Because I use FL Studio, which is more one of the more visual types of composing software, I use a lot of patterns. I see things in patterns. So what I'll do is I'll riff on something on the keyboard, record it MIDI, and then obviously I can visualize that pattern. So then I could start to match beats to it and bring other synths on top. So it's a very visual experience rather than the classic type of composing.
At the concert, was there a pretty impressive visual performance? I went to the FM84 concert in San Francisco, and you can see the photographs on my San Francisco photo album, but they had a pretty impressive light show for that.
Well, actually, we did it more kind of, we had a large projector behind the stage. It was about the same size as the stage. So all of the artists put together like a kind of a video mix kind of thing. I mean, mine's up on YouTube at the moment, if you just search Star Noir on YouTube. And it's kind of just, rips from different movies that have influenced me and that go with the music, some rendered stuff. We all put together like a visual aesthetic to our music as well.
And yeah, you have visual illustrations that go with your music.
Yes, I do. I use After Effects a lot. I've started using a program called DaVinci, which is a fairly new program for video editing and stuff. And I'm putting together an 8-bit video for one of my songs as we speak. So hopefully I should be able to get that out the door in the next couple of weeks. But I really love that 8-bit style as well. So I'm trying to do a lot of that.
You have a recent EP that was just released. Is this your first major release?
Yes, it is. Yes, I ended up with like 12, 13 songs, but nothing was completely finished. So I just drew a line in the sand. I gave myself a date and I was like, right, I'm going to get what the best of these songs done. So I ended up with 3, which I've released on cassette as well as vinyl. It sold very well. It's been very well received, strangely in France more than in any other country. The French seem to love it for some reason. But I've got another single coming out in the next couple of weeks as well. So keep your eyes open for that.
You have one, Psycho City. Is a lot of your stuff kind of horror themed? I know there's are they called Perturbator?
Perturbator?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one. They do horror themed. Is that what you're going with?
Well, I think yes. I think it's more, you'll find, like, for example, the next single is more cyberpunk kind of space, but it's still got that horror edge. I like that kind of tension. It's very John Carpenter-esque. If you listen to a lot of his soundtrack work, it builds that tension. It uses a lot of ambient noises in the background. It is very soundtrack-based rather than classic music composition.
What do you think of that show, Stranger Things, and their soundtrack?
I thought it was fantastic. I've seen the band Survive do that live, that soundtrack live, which was quite a pleasure. I really like, I think it's done a lot for the scene. I mean, when I talk to people and I talk about my music and they don't tend to listen to synthwave, I use Stranger Things as well as the film Drive and things like that as entry points into the music scene, because a lot of people have seen it.
I know Drive, that came out a long time ago. They had Kavinsky, which is also that kind of a dark synth style. And that was kind of the beginning of the new retrowave genre. The band who does Stranger Things, are they explicitly a new retrowave artist?
No, they're actually electro. They've been going quite well. I'd recommend checking them out because they've got a lot of different aspects to their music. I wouldn't say that they class themselves as synthwave, but I think that they've got a retro vibe anyway, kind of that retro lo-fi vibe, but they do a lot more kind of classic electronica music and more ambient stuff as well, which I think works well for the Stranger Things kind of, universe.
I wanted to back up for a second. You mentioned John Carpenter, right? Is that who you mentioned earlier?
Yes,
it is. So how would you... Like other than Carpenter, like, who would you say the biggest influences on this, like, subgenre are?
It's a strange one. I mean, I've actually, if you listen to Perturbator's new single, I don't know if you've checked that yet, but he's gone more for Depeche Mode vibe. I think there's a lot of kind of goth, kind of new wave, kind of old, late 80s artists that do have that sound, that kind of, they heavily use synths, but they use them in a more dark, gothic kind of tension-building way. I'd still say Nine Inch Nails for me. I think Trent Reznor is a master of synths, and I've been listening to his music. One of the first cassettes I ever bought was the Downward Spiral album, and I think his sound is very much on point for that kind of new kind of dark wave sound.
Yeah, it's interesting about a new retro wave and the new synth wave that's coming out. It's influenced especially by the 80s and to some degree the 90s industrial music. But it's not just copying something. I think it is. It's creating something new.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I make a point that I don't try and use anyone else's sound. So if you listen to Psycho City, it has, even though obviously it's still going to sound like a certain aesthetic, I made a point of just going with what I felt. So I don't listen to any other music like a couple of hours before I do any kind of music production, because I don't want to be influenced by other people, because I think there's, and it's not a bad thing, but I think there's a lot more classic synthwave that does, you can listen to a lot of it on a playlist and there is a lot of, similar sounds going on, which is good for the scene, but I personally didn't want to do that.
And with the original 80s stuff, a lot of it was movie soundtracks like John Carpenter films, Vangelis from Blade Runner. But the regular new wave music coming out, that was on that, not so much the movie soundtracks, was more kind of upbeat. I don't think there was a lot of a dark wave coming out besides the movie soundtracks.
No, I think that it's almost... What I love about synthwave, and I think Gunship are a good example, that they capture a feeling of what it was like growing up in the 80s, especially. I think that's a very core part of the audience. And they capture the idea of, 8-bit video games when we started playing them, or 16-bit if that was your era. And just, it's all that palm trees and Ferraris and Miami beaches and, again, the Midnight's a good example. I think they, using saxophones and things like that, it's very much capturing an aesthetic of the 80s rather than just the music.
It's interesting because J.G. Michaels, you were on that show with Jamie Curcio. He grew up in the 80s, and he was kind of making the point that it's kind of capturing a fantasy world that never really existed. He was saying that it's sort of based on 80s retro futurism,
There's also the whole aspect of a lot of the people I know that are into retro wave actually didn't grow up in the 80s. There's still that nostalgia for that 80s aesthetic. I don't know if you could comment on that, Jody.
Well, I actually grew up in the 80s, so I'm a little bit privileged in that sense. But I think that the 80s actually it was a lot more popular in the late 90s, early 2000s was 80s stuff than maybe even in the 80s. But I think one thing that's pushed it is video gaming. I think there's a certain kind of, you know, that kind of soft kind of remembrance for like early like 8-bit and 16-bit gaming, Mega Drive, SNESes, that kind of thing. And that appeals to people of all sorts of ages and all sorts of generations. And I think it's that. And it's also the, you know, the movies. You know, everybody's seen like Die Hard. Everybody's seen Lethal Weapon. Everybody's seen a lot of the 80s films, Top Gun, you know, Days of Thunder, that kind of thing. Star Wars, you know what I mean? It's that is timeless, a lot of that kind of aesthetic. And I think that's what's pushed the scene along.
You've done a lot of photography, and there's just such a wide variety of subject matter. You have these futuristic cities in Hong Kong, but you also have Scotland and old castles, and mm-hmm. a few of them, I think, you've done some of the United States. You posted one, was it the Owens Valley, the Eastern Sierras?
Yes, I did, yes. So, yes, photography for me is something I picked up about 10 years ago. And because I've been quite lucky in my job, because I've been a contractor in the games industry, it's allowed me to live in the States. I've lived in New York. I've lived in Texas. I've also lived in Canada and Nova Scotia. I've lived in Hong Kong. I've lived in Japan. So the thing that's always kept, you know, is I find it kind of almost like a comfort blanket. It's one thing I do whenever I go to a new place is I take my camera out. You know what I mean? And I get familiar with the place by taking photos. And I'm just a very visually driven person. So, like, in my flat here, I've got my own artwork, my own photography on the wall. I go to a lot of photography, you know, exhibitions, that kind of thing. I'm a really visually driven person. And photography is one of the ways that I express it.
There's such a wide variety, as I was saying. Is there one particular place that really relates to the kind of music and illustrations that you're doing? I'd probably guess the ones you did of Hong Kong and Tokyo.
Yeah, both of those two cities, Hong Kong especially. I mean, I still feel it. It's the neon city. It's dirty through the day. It's busy. It's quite a hard place to be. But at night time, it's just got something. Do you know what I mean? The streets get a bit quieter. It gets a bit more seedy. It gets a bit more cyberpunk. There's arcades everywhere. There's little noise, electronic noises coming out of buildings and stuff. And it's the closest that I've come to that Blade Runner-esque cyberpunk Shadowrun kind of, you know, dystopian future city, if you see what I mean.
In the United States and the UK, you see it kind of on like a small scale. I know in London there used to be this place at Piccadilly Circus called the Trocadero. I never got a chance to visit it the last time I was in London, but it looks really cyberpunk from the pictures, but I heard they took it down.
Yeah, it used to be an old arcade with like a little kind of fairground ride in it and stuff. It's where I grew up when I first moved out, because I moved to London when I was about 19, 20, and all the arcade machines, we'd spend most of our weekends there. And then in fact it's weird, because I would say in the late 2000s arcades went out of fashion in the UK, so they all closed down, you know, and all the machines were sold off and that kind of thing. And now there's a massive resurgence of it, so you're seeing them open again, which, you know, is quite interesting to that 80s vibe that we were talking about.
Yeah, I mean I grew up I was born in 85, so I pretty much grew up in the 90s, but I still remember there were a lot of 80s style arcades around, even up until like the mid 90s, or even the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I'm trying to buy one myself at the moment. I'm trying to buy an old shell of one and then do it up myself and make a Star Noir arcade cabinet. Because I'm just like that. I come up with these ideas. But, you know, there's one just opened near me that's got over 200 machines, including an original Outrun hydraulic machine and stuff. And, you know, these things are really in fashion now. That place is always packed. It's, you know, it's always busy. Again, I think it's that big resurgence of the 80s vibe.
Yeah, I actually wanted to. You said you were in Japan and Hong Kong. There's a whole art movement now called Sino-Futurism.
Mm-hmm.
Tries to look at futurism within like Asia, and it just seems like there's a real cyberpunk aesthetic that gets connected to like Asian culture these days. I don't know, like what was your experience like in Japan, and why do you think that may be that there's this Asian cyberpunk arising?
I think it's quite an interesting subject, because when I was there, you saw a lot of it in fashion. Because of the culture, especially in Japan, it's all about the community. It's all about the group. So a lot of the older generations, they don't really dress, you know, they don't dress extravagantly. They don't put their personality in the way they dress. It's kind of I am very polite, I'm very quiet culture. But the youth coming through over the last couple of generations is getting louder and louder, because they're trying to find ways of expressing themselves. So they do it through music. They do it through the way they dress. If you look at like Baby Metal, for example, you know, I don't know if you've seen them, and like there's such a weird mix of vibes. And like you go to some of the parks in Tokyo, and there's people in cosplay every day. You know, it's the youth are just finding ways of expressing themselves, and I think they're pushing that kind of future kind of artistic movement as well.
I noticed that kind of cyberpunk aesthetic. I've never been to Asia, but I've heard is more the kind of stuff built in Tokyo and Hong Kong from the 80s. I've seen renderings of a lot of new futuristic stuff from China, and it's futuristic, but I guess it's a much more different aesthetic.
Yeah, I think one thing you've got, I mean, I think especially Hong Kong and especially Tokyo, the reason why it's got the cyberpunk vibe is because it's such an overpopulated city. So it's almost going on the dystopian side. And I think that's what gives it that vibe. Because, for example, if you go to any district in Tokyo, all the buildings are 6 or 7 floors high. They have these big neon signs outside for like, there'll be like 20 restaurants in that building on different floors. You get a tiny little lift, you go up. It's that kind of use of space that I think really gives it that vibe. Because if you look at a lot of the artwork for cyberpunk, it is very claustrophobic. It's very, you know, high rise. Look at Blade Runner and things like that. And, you know, it's this kind of overpopulation stuff as well. So that's why those cities have that vibe.
And, you know, what's ironic about it, it's a dystopian, and you see all these dystopian films ranging from, especially from the cyberpunk genre, ranging from Blade Runner to the new Ghost in the Shell film. And what's ironic about it is it's meant to be a dystopia, but they end up being visually compelling, and people, in a sense, kind of latch onto it as a utopian vision, which is ironic.
Yeah, and I think the actual music's interesting. So I grew up reading Judge Dredd comics, for example, and you've got this idea of the higher you live in these buildings, the more well off you are. So you get this underclass. They always talk about this underclass it's in Blade Runner, you know, it's below the kind of cloud level. It's where it's dark, where there's drugs, guns, gangs, you know, it's where action happens, and it's that kind of exciting kind of danger, seedy kind of vibe that is me. That's where the punk aspect of cyberpunk comes from, because in essence, that's what punk is.
I was going to say, are you a fan at all of William Gibson, Neuromancer?
Oh, yeah. Neuromancer is... I first read that book when I was very, very young, and it influenced me a lot. And since... Because I've got into virtual reality recently myself, and about HTC Vive, and I'm actually making a musical experience in it just to see if I can. And the fact that we can do that and I can go into virtual reality, interact with other people... I remember when I first put it on and I had that Neuromancer feeling. Do you know what I mean? I was stepping into another world. I was a different person. And yes, I'm a massive fan of that idea.
The illustration you did, Ping Tron, is that a computer animation, or is that a real place?
That was a real place. I went to, in London, they do this thing called Secret Cinema every so often, where they basically recreate an entire film in like a, you know, in a warehouse type thing. And in fact, that was from their recreation of Alien, and they just had some futuristic rooms and stuff, and that just really inspired me. I love neon. I've got actual neon on my walls in my flat and stuff, and that I just really loved the vibe of that room, and it's kind of the colors of that I use a lot in my later artworks.
I think I showed you my art, but I've done some paintings of a Piccadilly Circus from mostly the old photographs from the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. But more recently, there's not so much, it's not so much neon anymore, but it's more of these electronic billboards.
Yes, and I think it's a different vibe now. I mean, I've got a bit of photography from there as well, and it's a colder light. The thing about neon, I mean, I've got a big orange neon cross on my wall, and it's in my little studio area, and I always have it on when I'm working at night and stuff, because it's a soft glow. It's a real feel. It's a physical light, if you see what I mean, rather than the digital light that you get from, you know, digital screens like monitors and the big billboards and stuff.
And it's just kind of ironic because back originally was viewed as being futuristic, but it's kind of, on one hand, it's used to portray the future in films like Blade Runner, but it's also seen as something kind of vintage and of the past today.
Yeah, and I think that's that juxtaposition of what synthwave is, or new retrowave, or whichever title you want to use for it. I think that is that pure juxtaposition. In fact, I found it quite amusing that if you've seen John Wick or John Wick 2, especially John Wick 2, they have a neon light in every scene of that film. And it's either pink or blue. And it's just, it really sets the scene of that film, even though that film's nothing to do with, you know, the kind of 80s or, you know, retro wave or anything like that. It gives it a vintage aesthetic, but a futuristic aesthetic at the same time.
Yeah, this seems to be the new retrowave colors, like a black background with the neon. It's either pink or turquoise.
Yes, it is. I mean, slight variations. But yeah, I mean, I've got color changing lights in my flat that I have a vaporwave and a retrowave setting. And that's got slightly different pinks and blues and things like that. So, it's, you know, those colors I used a lot.
Have you seen those illustrations, they're animated ones by Florian Renner?
I have, yes. That's one thing I'm trying my hand at the moment. I think they're absolutely amazing.
I forget the music video that was from. Was that for Miami Nights?
Yes, it was, yes. That is to me, that's talent. I found it absolutely amazing. And that's one thing that I love about the scene at the moment. It's not only the music anymore. There's a couple of Facebook groups out there about new retro wave designers and video editors and that kind of thing. And some of the artwork that's coming out is just, it's mind-blowing. It's absolutely beautiful. And, you know, you've got that more futuristic rendered vibe, and then you've got the 8-bit kind of animations like Perturbator used in some of his videos and that kind of thing. And then if you look at Turbo Killer, yeah, I don't know if you've seen the video of Capital Boots Turbo Killer, that alone is one of the best music videos I've ever seen.
Yeah, with my art, I guess there's some overlap, but I haven't really got so much into the digital illustration. But with my art, like, I show a lot of brush strokes, but my style, I'm working more on getting it really refined and crisp, and I guess I've done some artwork that relates to that genre.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say more of my subject matter, some of it is inspired by the kind of, some of it is inspired by kind of mid-century interiors. Some of it is the kind of more kind of film noir, art deco, neon kind of aesthetic. And then I've done a few paintings that have a more 80s retro-futuristic inspiration. Based on what I showed you, what impression did you get?
Well, I could definitely see that Art Deco kind of vibe. I think you do that really well in your eyes. It's almost like, again, it's a bit of a juxtaposition between the 80s neon vibe, where you can see a lot of that, but also the kind of way you use shapes and composition in your art is a bit more kind of, you know, mid-century or Art Deco. So I think that's what makes it interesting, is you're combining the two.
Yeah, I know with cyberpunk and the word, like, use the word noir, star noir, cyberpunk was kind of influenced by the original film noir, especially Blade Runner.
Yes, yes. I love the noir, just the noir vibe. I think, in fact, it goes even further back. If you look at some of the sci-fi, if you read any of the old sci-fi books from like 20s and 30s, they use the idea of noir, and, you know, kind of, it's that kind of, it's something that's old but not, you know, it's kind of a weird word, but, you know, it's been used time and time again through history.
J.G. Michael, have you seen my work?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it. I think I do like the noir vibe to it. And I think that's very insightful on Jody's part to mention how there's that noir vibe in the retro wave scene.
But it is kind of interesting how we've gone through these different eras in history. And I think people are craving something new, but it's hard to just come up with something from scratch. So you kind of borrow from the best aspects of past genres, whether it's music or visual arts or even architecture. And I think you can create something new.
I mean, yeah, I completely agree. I think influence is all the way, you know, is our past experiences, the books that we've read, the things we've seen, you know. I mean, my inspiration is everything I've ever done and, you know, dreams and, you know, history and these things, you know. It's, you know, when you make something, you never make something truly new. But what you're doing is that's what creativity is a mashup of all the things that you've seen and experienced.
You have a quote, design is not art, design is an exercise in psychology. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, to me, when you design something, you're actually speaking to somebody's brain. You're speaking to that aspect of themselves. So when you're designing something, for example, when I design a bit of a game or I design some art or something, I'm trying to create an emotion. I'm trying to create a feeling. I'm trying to talk to that base sense of a human being, and that is psychology. And I think that that's what it is. I think, you know, a lot of art is very psychologically affecting. Like, I've seen some, you know, art that's really made me, you know, kind of quite upset and quite unnerved or quite happy, they're psychological responses. So that to me is part of art.
Yeah, I think there's a huge psychological element to this kind of thing. One you mentioned sci-fi authors. One that I've always found interesting for that reason is J.G. Ballard. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's very interested in the cross sections between like nostalgia and futurism and technology and the way it affects this psychologically.
Yeah, so I'm not familiar. I've just made a note of that. Actually, I'm always after new authors, but I to me that's because I studied psychology at university. And you know, it's always interested me. I've been fascinated with the human mind and how it works. And I think that, you know, music is a very psychological thing. You know, art is a very psychological thing. And, you know, when the future is more psychological in the sense of, you know, physical jobs are being covered by AI more. And, you know, we know that we're going down that path and there's not much we can do about it. So it's all about the psychological aspect of humans, you know, the psyche, the brain, you know, what we can do with these things. You know, imagine if we all had a living wage, for example. We could all be creative, we could all make things, and it doesn't matter what those things were. That's a more psychological approach to humanity rather than a physical.
Oh, you're talking about the basic income with automation of the economy?
Yeah, it's just I was reading a book about how that could actually work recently, and it fascinates me because what I do is I make things that humans can deal with very, you know, very easily. I facilitate human behavior within to technology. That is primarily my job. And AI is more and more taking over our lives, but it's going to start doing the more physical aspects of our job, the more, you know, menial parts of our lives. And I think, you know, there is a point where we are going to actually have to consider things like living wages and stuff. But, I mean, again, that's a cyberpunk dystopian kind of future that a lot of people are scared of.
Yeah, a lot of the transhumanist experts like Zoltan Isvan, he predicts that IA will eventually replace even like jobs like doctors and surgeons, the most skilled jobs. I mean, that's kind of a... I'm somewhat skeptical of that, but who knows? He could be right in the distant future.
Well, I mean, maybe more GPs. I mean, in the UK, we have things called GPs, which is where you go to get diagnosed before you go to, like, see an actual doctor. You know, you could see that being a more of an AI approach. Because, I mean, that is kind of what the person does, is the person listens to the information from the user, from the, you know, the patient, then processes it and then makes a diagnosis. And then points that person in the right direction. that could be done by AI.
Yeah, I feel like that's another interesting aspect of the like dark wave subgenre. I feel like it's tied a lot in ways to anxieties about technological change and automation, because it has that harder edge vibe. It's kind of cold and mechanic. I don't know what you think about that, Jody.
Oh, definitely. I think that it is, again, it's that juxtaposition between the excitement, but the you know, the kind of the anticipation, the fear of the future. And that's why I think that the synth as an instrument is essential to that new kind of dark wave vibe, because of that electronic sound. But you're making it sound kind of menacing and it unnerving. And, you know, you kind of use a lot of, you know, discordant stuff. And I think that that is what that cyberpunk vibe is. It's about, is it going to be any better in the future? Is it going to be worse? Are we going to be fighting over scraps? Are we going to be living in these massive, like, hive cities? You know, these are all possibilities that even sci-fi writers in the 20s and 30s wrote about. And, you know, we are heading in that direction in some ways.
With your photography, it's amazing how you have such contrast. You have the futuristic element, but you also have a lot of nature photography and a lot of medieval castles and villages. What are your thoughts on your interest in sort of the contrast between the future and the past?
Well, I mean, I'm a great lover of history. I think to know where we're going, you know, in the future, we have to understand where we've been. So I read a lot of historical books on, you know, whenever I move to a new city or a new country, I always buy a couple of books on the history of that country or city. I always study these things, but I've got a great love for nature. I grew up in a little village in the middle of a place called Yorkshire in the UK, where there was more sheep than people. I mean, there was fields everywhere. It wasn't cyberpunk at all. It's the opposite. And that's why big cities have always been an interest to me. But I always have my roots in, I love nature. I like going to places where there's no humans. And walking for, you know, a day or two, take a tent, sleep under the stars. I love that kind of aspect of the world, as well as the kind of cyberpunk.
With your stuff from Japan, you have the futuristic Japanese cities like in Tokyo, but you also have some of ancient Japanese cities in forest.
Mm. Well, in fact, because I lived in Tokyo, I didn't have a lot of time because I was working very, very, very long hours. So basically, everywhere I went was a journey from Tokyo. But I once jumped on this train that it was a proper like 1950s looking train, and it went up into the mountains. I didn't even know where I was going. I took my camera, I took a lunch, and I ended up. And you could see a lot.
As far as your visits to the United States, do you have any particular locations that were of interest to you?
Well, actually, I was lucky enough to, a couple of years ago, I did a road trip across the States as well. So I started in LA, I went all the way down to Albuquerque, through like Vegas and that kind of thing, and then back up to New York. I did that over a couple of weeks. And I think what surprised me, and this might sound quite naive for someone coming from the UK, but is the difference of places and landscapes that you have in the US. Like, we went through kind of Texas and that kind of thing, even though, you know, I'd lived in Dallas, but Texas, you think, is just going to be desert. It's not. There's lush forests, there's all sorts of stuff. The people in these little towns that you went through. And then I spent some time in Nashville. And I've got to say, Nashville was one of my favorite places just because of the music scene. You go to these bars and people just rock up with guitars or, you know, vocalists and stuff, and they don't really know each other and they just get on stage and jam together. And I loved that. I loved that kind of vibe.
Did you have, you had some photography. Was that the Eastern Sierras in California?
Yes, that's correct, yes. I mean, California, again, I found California a very strange experience for me because it is quite high-tech. It doesn't feel like the rest of the States in a lot of ways. I think it sees itself differently as well. That's a vibe I got.
Yeah, I've been up there like a bishop. I went on a camping trip there a while back in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on Las Vegas?
I hated it. I really hate it. I would think
that would be, because that's kind of like the neon capital of America.
But it's not. It really isn't. I found it a very weird, difficult place in the sense of it was like a big playground for adults. It really was, and it was so tacky, but on the other end of what my vision of that, you know, dystopian cyberpunk future is. I know it has neon everywhere, and the casinos were a bit of fun, but, you know, it's the ultimate of, you know, it's the pinnacle of capitalistic culture in the US is Vegas. You know what I mean? It's money, it's wealth, it's plush, it's... And as if someone from the UK, it can be quite overwhelming. It's very loud as well, not in the noise. I mean, just everything around it is, you know, people go there and, you know, Americans can be quite naturally loud anyway. Put them in Vegas, give them a couple of beers, and it is just carnage. That's what I found. But, you know, I had fun, but it took a while to adjust to it, I must say.
Well, you have these illustrations for Star Noir called Lost Future. Was Lost Future an album?
Well, that was originally the name of my first EP, and then I broke it down. So actually, you know, it is still something I'm playing around with for a future album release, because I've got other tracks that follow on from Psycho City, because the way that I put the tracks together was a story, and it was a story about, you know, a guy that lost his future and he didn't know where he was, and he was in this weird 80s kind of action movie himself, this mysterious city called Psycho City. And I think, you know, that's the vibe I was going for. So I think you might find that that'll resurge itself at some point, either in some more artwork or even into my music.
I know, yeah, they both use the skeleton on them.
Yes. I have a lot of skulls in my house. I have a fascination with them for some reason. And I cannot really explain why, but I tend to use them in a lot of my artwork as well.
For your profile album, I noticed that you have the sun symbol. Is that explicitly from FM84, or is that just a symbol that's used in a lot of retrowave albums with as a half sun, and then the bottom part is cut up into lines?
Well, actually, that isn't his. That actually is a bit of 80s artwork. I've seen it before in many, many ways. And it was, in fact, I've done a couple of paintings around that vibe as well. And I think, you know, it was one of those original bits of the 80s aesthetic that was picked up by some of the early synthwave, retrowave scene people and the music. And, you know, I think because FM, you know, 84 are very, very large in the scene, you know, obviously that symbol's known with their music, but you know it's actually a lot older than that.
Yeah, this is like slightly off topic from that, but I was curious since it's had such an influence on retrowave and popularizing it. What do you think of the Hotline Miami games?
Oh, I loved them. I absolutely adored them. Just as a game, and never mind the soundtrack. I think they did something new. To say it was an indie game as well, the entire aesthetic of that game was amazing. It was a very simplistic game, you know, kind of game mechanic, very action-packed, very violent, but in a cartoon kind of 16-bit style, 8-bit 16. But then the music on top, and, you know, it fit the graphics used. It fit the aesthetic of the game.
Have you thought about designing your own video game that goes with your aesthetic?
Yes, actually. I was putting some ideas down about doing a side-scrolling beat-em-up, like in the vein of Streets of Rage, Moonwalker, Turtles, Simpsons. They all use the same kind of mechanic, and because I can draw in that style quite well, I've been thinking about putting a little bit of something together. But another artist that did that is Power Glove did that, and Magic Sword, I think, have done that as well. They had a little bit, but it was only for a video. It wasn't an actual game. So I might actually see about doing it as a game.
And I know there is a new retrowave-themed horror film. I think it's called The Summoner.
Yes,
I know
yes.
Your album cover for Psycho City reminds me of a horror film poster.
Yeah, well, actually, I know James. James was one of the people involved in the Retro Future Fest Festival in London, where they did some previews of it, and in fact, I played one of the tracks off it. But yeah, there is a lot of that. That film is in that vibe, and the entire soundtrack is all new artists in the darkwave scene. So, you know, I'm really excited to see the final version of that film. And I've noticed on Kickstarter, there's a couple more. So I think there's a lot of that kind of B-movie-esque, if you want to use B-movie, but I don't mean it in a bad way of film, but I mean in the fact that people are doing it on low budgets.
What are some of your upcoming projects?
So I've got a single coming, which is a completely, not a new sound for me, but it's a progression of my sound, and I'm interested to see what people think of that, and obviously there's a video coming for that. I actually have a project that we're in the planning stages of with Kallax, White Tiger, Absolute Valentine, and myself. We're not sure exactly what it is, but it's going to probably involve a live gig of some description. I have a second gig down in Cheltenham on December the 15th, which is called Neon Winter. It's the winter version of Retro Future Fest, and I'm playing there with Kallax and White Tiger and some other artists. And then basically I have another EP coming, and I'm going to be announcing the date for that in the next couple of weeks.
I wanted to ask real quick, you were talking about early century sci-fi. A lot of those sci-fi authors are more utopian. So which ones influenced you, out of curiosity?
Well, again, I think I'd have to say William Gibson all the time. I think that he is the biggest influence, I've got to say. Not only Neuromancer, but some of his other works as well. There is other artists, but I really can't remember the actual names. I'm really actually bad at names. But William Gibson, to me, is one of the strongest influences for that.
Jody Coombs, it has been an excellent show. Your work is fantastic. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, and thank you for your questions, guys, and thank you for your time. It's been great.
And also, thanks, J.G. Michael and Sam Kevorkian.
Enjoyed it, as always.
Thank you. Another good episode.